We're exploring goat yoga here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. I've appreciated having a yoga practice for about 15 years, but never in the company of goats. So this will be a learning experience. Do I want to hold side plank, shake in crow pose, or nuzzle with a goat on my mat instead? Come on, goat wins, always. Have you ever practiced yoga with goats meandering around the mats? What was that experience like? Do you think goats and yoga is a passing trend? 800-642-1234. Clara Hedrick is a founder of LeClaire Family Creamery in Malone, Wisconsin. She's a goat handler for their goat yoga classes. Clara, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. So why should we incorporate goats into the ancient practice of yoga?
Today's society is far removed from our farm animals and from animals in general. And it offers our people that are participating in the yoga an opportunity to interact with an animal. And the goat is just perfect because it's very inquisitive and it's very calming. If you stop and think about, I bring in the baby goats that are 7 to 10 days of age. So everybody loves a baby. So the size is non-threatening and they're just nothing but adorable. And if you look at the face of a goat, it is always smiling. So it just makes people happy. And so as they're doing their yoga, you know, they have an animal that's very, like I said, calming and just makes them smile.
Well, walk us through what a goat practice is like at your creamery. What can we expect?
When you come, I'm going to welcome you to LeClaire Family Creamery. And then I have been a high school agriculture teacher for 39 years. And so education is the utmost importance to me. And I think people are very interested in learning new things. And so what I always do is I talk a little bit about the similarities between the human baby and the goat baby. And so I will give you a little bit of an education. The goat baby on an average is going to be 7 pounds when it's born. Our human baby is about 7.5 pounds when it's born. If you look at human moms and goat moms, they're about the same in size, about 100 to 150-ish pounds. When that baby is born, the human mom has those hands and fingers that she can help that baby out with and et cetera and care for that baby. And if you think about the goat mom, she has her legs and her hooves. So that baby really needs to be self-sufficient. So one of the things when it's born, it's going to be up and walking within 30 minutes.
Wow.
And then it has that natural suckling instinct so that it's looking for its nourishment. And so that's one of the things that I encourage folks, to understand is that baby is naturally going to have that suckling instinct and that it's not necessarily hungry. It's just inquisitive. And like the human child has those fingers and is always touching things, that goat baby, its lips are its fingers. And so it's going to naturally want to touch things. And so I ask that that the people don't let them suckle on their hands because, as we well know, we have a lot of good bacteria in our hands, as well as other kinds of bacteria on our hands. And so, the babies then, our yoga instructor, Lorelei, starts our yoga out. And then about 15 minutes later, I show up with the stars of our show. And I bring them out in little tubs on a wagon. And then I place them amongst the people. And then my job is basically I keep the baby goats, intermingled within the folks. We don't have any fences up or anything of the sort. We have a beautiful courtyard surrounded by beautiful landscaping. And so we're outdoors on the grass. And so you enjoy, nature at its finest, along with a little baby goat, just walking about. And then, they're all different. If you think about personalities of people and children, the goats are the same way. Some just love to run and bounce. others love to, just walk up to them. And, every so often they have one that's just a cuddler. And so they'll just cuddle up on their mat and just lay down there right next to them. When we're about 15 minutes before the end of the class, we stop. And then you have a chance to pick the goats up, pet the goats, take pictures with the goats. Because up until that time, I ask that folks just let them do what they want to do. And because they're babies, once in a while, they will climb up, but not real often. You know, they're more apt to, just stay close. And then the yoga instructor is going to do the exercises on the ground, things that will keep them about the same height and stuff. So.
Oh, wow. It sounds like so much fun and very playful into a practice that is so sacred. We're talking with Clara Hedrich, who is with LeClaire Family Creamery in Malone, Wisconsin. Goat handler for their goat yoga classes that are underway. You can join in. Have you ever done yoga with goats? What was that experience like? Did it change your yoga practice? 800-642-1234. Clara, do you think that there are therapeutic aspects or, mental benefits of having these young goats around?
Very much so, because, if you think about it, some people are they're just really not into, shall we say, exercise, and they're kind of intimidated by the idea of going to a yoga class. And so, that's one of the first things when people come, they look Lorelei in the eye and they say, "I'm sorry, but we're really not here for yoga. We're here for the goat." And so, and she's well aware of that. And so she's fine, absolutely fine with that. And every so often you'll catch her, she'll start laughing and she said, "I'm sorry. I was watching the goat and I forgot where I'm at in my routine." And then she'll, flip back into her routine and the likes. And so they bring that sense of happiness. And then what we find is that folks will go, "Oh my gosh, I can actually do yoga. I really actually like this." And so the goat has brought them to an exercise that they normally wouldn't have never ever thought they would go or anything. And then every so often I have somebody that says, "Oh, because of my knees, because of my hips or, something, I can't get down on the ground." And I say, "Oh, don't worry about that. We have chairs here on the patio. Grab a chair, bring it out, sit on the chair and just pretend you're doing the yoga and enjoy the goats." And so just recently we had somebody that was there, and she brought her chair over and she was sitting, and before you know it, she's on the ground because she wanted to interact with those goats. And so those goats will bring that out in people, where they just want to, and they focus on the goat and they forget about some of their other issues and things. And so it really, and what I always find, and it's just heartwarming, for me, at least, as the folks are leaving, I always thank them for coming. And they say, "Oh, geez, thanks so much for this opportunity. This was wonderful. We had the best time." And, I've had several folks, go, "This was the best day of my life."
Oh, my goodness.
Like, "Oh, my gosh." it's so special, because it, like I said, they watch the, the little goat jump around and, just come by them and, you can see they're smiling and they're just happy and, and the people are laughing. And so it's just, there's a lot of, shall we say, hidden therapy in
sure.
doing goat yoga.
Yeah.
That people just don't realize, but you're getting people out, you're getting them to exercise, you're getting them to, learn more about, the animal in general, because that's the other comment I get, because, folks can ask questions about, goat husbandry and just the goats in general, or about our cheese or, whatever they have questions about. And they always, one of their comments is, "I've learned so much today, about this." And so, it's kind of a double-edged, benefit, shall we say, besides the exercise, the therapy, the education. So we kind of try to, roll that all in one. And being a, a high school, former high school teacher, one of the things that you always do, because you're always dealing with clients that are not that interested in learning, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of sneak in through the back door and without them realizing, "Hey, I know a lot of stuff. I got a lot of information today." So.
We have Clara Hedrick, who is a goat yoga handler at her Eastern Wisconsin Creamery in Fond du Lac County. Are you a yoga enthusiast? What do you think of goats in the mix? Have you ever practiced yoga with a cat in the room? My cat is always walking around under me when I practice yoga. What do you think of goat yoga? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Clara Hedrick here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about adorable goats and the goat yoga craze here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Wisconsin creamery is embracing it with baby goats and yoga coming together on Saturdays in September. Are you ready to add some goat antics to your downward-facing dog? What about closing your eyes and melting into Shavasana at the end of practice and there's a goat nuzzling your face? Have you experienced goat yoga? Join in 800-642-1234. Clara Hedrick facilitates goat yoga at her creamery in Malone, Wisconsin. Stays with us for about 9 more minutes. So, Clara, I'm wondering, you know, when did you start goat yoga? And was there a learning curve, like in those first classes, to get your goats to kind of incorporate into those classes?
Yoga about 5 years ago, and we've been doing it usually every Saturday from June through the end of September. We'll run two sessions on our busiest part of our season, then one session. And the goat is just, I always say kids and kids, and that's what a baby goat is known as, are just perfect together. They are a very loving, inquisitive animal. So it's not like you have to, train this goat to like to be by people. They just naturally want to do that. They love to play with people. So there's not, we didn't have to do anything in particular, to get that goat to interact with the people. I bring new baby goats in every week. So it's a brand new experience for those goats every week. And you would think that I had those goats trained, to be a part of that event. And we also, we don't only offer goat yoga for adults. We also offer goat yoga for children. And so we have a separate instructor who does more of the, shall we say, playful yoga. Instead of using the yoga terms, she talks about, being an animal's trunk or, waving the elephant trunk or,
growing
something
into
of that.
A tree. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. And then, so for them, we do the yoga first, because usually what I find is as soon as the goats come out, the instructor becomes invisible. And so, to focus on, the exercise portion of it for the children, we do the yoga first. And then when the goats come out, then we just let the children interact with the goats because that works the best.
We've seen pictures online of these baby goats standing on people's backs in tabletop position. Does that really happen?
It depends on the situation. I was doing an event off-site, and it was kind of hilarious. This one goat was just really into it, and what that goat did is it started by the person at the far end and walked across each person's back. it was just like it was timed or was programmed to do that. But usually, once in a while, I will have them climb. Where they will climb up onto people, onto their backs. But it's not a real common kind of thing because of the age of the goat that I use. If I would use one that's a little bit older, it probably would do well. But we're always very concerned about, obviously the folks that are doing the yoga and obviously, the animals. So, that's why I've chosen that age because, like I said, they're... they just melt your heart.
Yeah.
They're just fun to be around.
Well, goats, they love treats. And I'm just wondering, we often like to feed goats from our hands. Do you allow any type of treats at the end of class or anything like that?
At that age, they are only going to be drinking milk.
Okay.
They will not do anything. You know, like somebody, like a child many times would like to breaks off a blade of grass and wants to feed that to the goat. Well, the goat might, you know, with its lips feel it and stuff, but it will not eat it because its stomach is not ready to go. It takes about 3 weeks for the stomach to get enough bacteria in it, rumen bacteria, for it to start digesting any kind of solid feeds and the likes. Mm-hmm. So that's why we stay strictly with the milk, and we do not bring out product for them to feed and the likes. It's primarily for the health of our animals, because that's always our first concern.
We're talking with Clara Hedrick, who's founder of LeClaire Family Creamery in Malone, a goat handler for their goat yoga classes, which have been going on for years. You can join in. Do you think goats and yoga is a really good mix? Have you taken up yoga in the pandemic? What have you learned? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You know, Claire, with the pandemic, your classes are outdoors. Many yoga classes have shifted online. What has happened with goat yoga in these times?
We've pretty much continued as is, because, you know, needless to say, doing goat yoga online just isn't the same.
Isn't the same,
And so we basically social distance. We're outdoors and, you know, mask when it was at its height, you know, so following all the guidelines and worked out really well. And it really, like I said, you know, we're outside. Far, you know, social distance. So it worked out really well.
So when your goats aren't frolicking around yoga class, what else do they do at your creamery? What is a goat's life like at your creamery?
On site, we have primarily our yearlings. So these would be the goats that would be getting ready to produce offspring. And so when they're just a few weeks away from actually having their kids, then they're transported to our milking facility. And so basically they're born at the milking facility. They will be, you know, raised at a kid raising facility. And then they we've actually specialized in the raising of our animals. And if you think about the dairy cow world, where you have your milking herd, you've got your heifer raising facility, your calf raising facility, and that's pretty much what we've done with our goat facility.
Well, let's take a call now. Shanna is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Shanna.
Hi, guys. I love that you're talking about this topic. I do goat yoga all the time. My yoga instructor with MKE Yoga Social in Milwaukee, she hosts events at, not at like a creamery, but the goats come to her. So we do it in places like Captain Paps Pilot House, Best Place Paps, various parks and things. And it's kind of the same format that you described, where we're doing about 15 to 20 minutes of yoga. Then the goats get released and they just come and play with everybody, buckle on our zippers, on our little jackets. And it's an amazing experience. It really is. And you're right about that. When they're a little tiny bit older, I think we always do ours with dwarf goats. They do like to stand on your back when you're doing, you know, tabletop and downward dog. So it's a really awesome experience. It just kind of changes your whole mentality when you're incorporating exercise and nature together like that.
Oh, well said, Shanna. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And I bet that, Clara, you really appreciate that as well.
Oh, yes, most definitely. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Shanna, do you think that this will continue on? Do you find that your yoga community is really embracing this?
Oh, yeah. All the events that are held down here are sold out very quickly. Full classes, we do it in large spaces so everybody can still socially distance. And yeah, it's growing very quickly in popularity.
Oh, that's so great. Thanks for calling in. Clara, do you
no
think
problem.
Yeah, do you think goat yoga is here to stay, Clara?
I most definitely, because and the reason I say that is as I've mentioned earlier, you know, we used to have somebody that we knew that lived on a farm or that had animals, And we're generations removed from that now. Most folks don't know of anybody, don't have that opportunity. And so this allows that opportunity for them to interact with an animal. And they absolutely adore it and love it. Because we do, besides the goat yoga, we do at least once a month have our baby goats available for people to pet. Actually, we're starting Pet and Play in September. And for special events, we will have, you know, Santa's littlest reindeer. We will have Cupid for Valentine's Day, you know, the leprechauns for St. Patrick's Day, the patriotic ones, you know, for the 4th of July. Back to school, kids in backpacks back to school. So if you brought in your backpack, you can get your picture with the goat, you know, all sorts of fun things.
You know who your stars are. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Clara Hedrick, founder of LeClaire Family Creamery, goat handler for the goat yoga classes and more. We have a link, by the way, to the creamery at WPR.org/mornings. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum paying tribute to Wisconsin Public Media's former director, Gene Purcell. He passed away in an accident this summer.
Gene Purcell dedicated almost his entire professional life to public media. His passion began in La Crosse, where he started as a student reporter at WLSU-FM, and through the decades, he worked his way up the ladder. Outside of work, Gene was a bit of a music nerd. He played guitar, collected thousands of albums, and restored an old jukebox. He also had a short stint in rock star management. Gene's sister Connie Purcell shares that story.
Many of you may not know, but in addition to all Gene's notable career accomplishments, he was also Pat Benatar's public relations guy for one night. It was a hot summer night in the early 80s. Gene and I were both living in La Crosse at the time. We decided we needed to beat the heat since neither of us had AC in our apartments. Gene suggested we meet at a smoky little neighborhood bar to shoot some pool and cool off with some refreshments. I'm all in. We met at the agreed-upon place at the agreed-upon time. This was an accomplishment in itself, as we were both too broke to afford a landline, and this was way, way before cell phones. So we're having a few, shooting some pool, and mostly minding our own business. A younger crowd came in. Soon they had us surrounded, and the commentary began. Is that Pat Benatar? What's she doing here? She has a concert tomorrow night. Will you sing for us? I was confused. I started looking around. I caught Gene's eye, and he gave me the hand across the throat gesture, the do not speak sign. Gene quickly summed up the current situation. He realized before I did that I had been mistaken for Pat Benatar. It may be hard to believe now, but back in the day, I was told I was a dead ringer for Pat Benatar. We had the same short dark hair and dark eyes, similar facial features, and a slight body build. That's where the similarities ended. Our voices were a certain miss. Gene is playing along. He is working the crowd. I heard someone say, "Brilliant idea, man. Hiding out with the locals. Our jig is up if I open my mouth." Not to worry, though. My big brother, the PR guy, calmed the masses and explained that I needed to rest my voice for the concert tomorrow night. There would be absolutely no conversation with Pat. This seemed to satisfy the crowd. I spent the rest of the night basking in our newfound and short-lived fame. I smiled happily, toasted our free drinks, and posed with my PR guy for photos with Pat's admirers. We shut down that little bar that night. We left with 1,000 well wishes and good luck at your concert from our fans. I'm happy to report we even had a little jingle still left in our pockets. I like to think all these years later, someone still recalls their chance encounter with Pat Benatar and her PR guy at some dive bar in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Rest in peace, Big Brother, in loving memory of Gene Purcell, also known as Pat Benatar's PR guy for one night.
That was Connie Purcell sharing a memory of her beloved brother, Gene Purcell. He was the former director of Wisconsin Public Media and passed away this summer. Connie dedicates that story to his wife, Ruth. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum. Once there was a man.
And now to the racial justice issue of immigration. The Southern Poverty Law Center says Black immigrants were eligible for naturalization beginning in 1870, but historical and legislative records show efforts to limit the number of people of color who could become U.S. citizens. And today, Black immigrants, they continue to face heightened detention and deportation. What do you want to know about the experiences of Black LGBTQIA plus immigrants? Did your family come from Latin America or the Caribbean or somewhere in Africa? Where did you find community when you arrived? Did you feel you could retain your individual or national identity? It's 800-642-1234. Deborah A. is an East African Southern-raised community organizer. She is national organizer for the Black LGBTQIA plus Migrant Project. She co-founded the UndocuBlack Network, advocating for current and formerly undocumented Black immigrants in the U.S. Deborah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. We have seen the Biden administration take steps to reverse a number of the Trump era zero tolerance, harsh racist immigration tactics. Can you take stock for us, though? Where are the policy decisions not measuring up, failing to account for the lived experiences of foreign-born Black people living in the U.S.?
Yeah, we have been extraordinarily disappointed in the current administration's failure to live up to its words these first 6 months. We've also understood that this is not President Biden's first go around in public office. We know that he's been around for four decades, and in that time has honestly been worked towards setting back racial justice and also immigrant justice. We know that the criminalization of Black migrants and additionally of Black, queer, and trans migrants has led to as few people as possible, one, being able to migrate to the United States, and two, once they've migrated, being able to stay safely outside of a detention center or outside of deportation proceedings. And that's something that BLMP and a number of other Black-led immigrant rights organizations are trying to address are these gaps.
Yeah, BLMP being the acronym for your organization, Black LGBTQIA plus Migrant Project. I'm wondering, Deborah, there's this statistic, it surfaces a lot, that Black immigrants are way more likely than immigrants overall to be deported on criminal versus immigration grounds. 76% of Black immigrants are deported compared to 45% of all immigrants, and that's from Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Can you put that in some context for us?
Absolutely. Both within our membership at BLMP and just members of the community in general that I've worked with over the last decade, I have known so many people to be deported so many Black people to have been detained for years on end and deported eventually to their native homelands. And to understand why there's such a massive discrepancy, we have to understand why forced migration happens to begin with. At this point, it's pretty like commonly known that people don't want to leave home unless there's nothing good waiting for them, unless their lives are in immediate danger and they have very little opportunity to live and thrive. And so we understand, we contextualize our membership's migration patterns through imperialism. We understand that imperialism historically has forced millions of people to migrate from their homelands. And because imperialism itself has a racist and capitalist character to it, so too do the migration patterns we see and the immigration laws we see today in 2021 in the United States. We understand that, you know, imperialism is a global system, of course, where the dominant political, economic interests of one nation, such as the United States, can expropriate for their own enrichment the land, labor, raw materials, and markets of other people. And so BLMP sees the combination or the coupling of free trade exploitation, free trade economic exploitation with US militarism that has forced a lot of people to ironically end up right here on native land in the United States. And so, of course, by militarism, I'm referring to, you know, the hybrid wars we've been seeing happening for the last few decades, the drone strikes, the sanctions, the blockades, the political interventions that happen internationally. We have seen tied directly to a lot of our members' migration stories. So, for example, we have a number of members from Honduras who are a part of the Garifuna community. Garifuna, they're Afro-Caribbean, but are located in Honduras and other Central American countries. And what's happening with their mass migration from Honduras is that global interests have taken it upon themselves to take the coastal land where the Garifuna native communities live. Mm-hmm. And these zones that are being created displace migrants and very quickly displace queer and trans migrants who are already isolated within their community. And so we're seeing over the last couple decades this larger population, larger demographic of Garifuna people migrating to the United States. We're also seeing, you know, Cuban migrants, Black Cuban migrants in particular, migrating to the United States as a result of the 70-year U.S. blockade.
I think what you're saying really follows into this next question. When arriving in the U.S., do you see Black immigrants losing or sacrificing their individual and national identities? Can they still proudly be Ghanaian or South African or Jamaican or Haitian or Nicaraguan? Or are they lumped into one group as Black?
Well, we ourselves find unity and solidarity amongst the label of Black using that term. It's a global political identity for us, and it feels really important to be able to feel that solidarity with billions of other Black people across the world. And also, we have found that because especially LGBTQ migrants are generally coming by themselves, we don't have large families, generally, and this does create a culture of isolation. It's precisely why we need to build a membership to be there for each other, to create a chosen family, to combat that isolation that people are forced into once they're here. There's, of course, communities that you can plug into that can help you embrace whatever identity, whatever your background is. And that being said, it's also we live in a society that is very quick to distance other. And so if you're Jamaican and the Jamaican community in Milwaukee, for example, does not is not accepting of queer and trans migrants, then you will still feel isolated no matter what your ethnic background is. And that applies to so many people from across the African or the Black diaspora.
We're talking with Deborah, a co-founder of the UndocuBlack Network, where she supported deportation defense for current and formerly undocumented Black immigrants. Have you experienced anti-Blackness in our immigration system? What is your story? What policies would you support for Black migrants that are anti-racist and humane? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Deborah A. here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing racial immigrant justice here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In a letter to the White House this summer, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, it explained how the immigration system is particularly hard for Black immigrants, who make up about 5% of the undocumented population in the U.S., but comprise about 20% of immigrants facing deportation on criminal grounds. Deborah A. co-founded an immigrant advocacy organization led by Black immigrants called UndocuBlack Network and is a national organizer for the Black LGBTQIA+ Migrant Project. She's with us for about 10 more minutes. Deborah, I'm wondering, with legal representation, are there enough lawyers for Black immigrants who face deportation, especially for Black immigrants who faced persecution?
There are not enough immigration attorneys who are decent, moral, and competent in general for all of the immigrant population, and most certainly not to represent all of the Black immigrants. So absolutely, there's a shortage. And oftentimes what happens is things get lost in translation. So attorneys who generally work with a different demographic perhaps literally don't have the capacity to speak in whatever language it is that a Black migrant speaks. There's so many. There's these things called country conditions packages. When you're an asylum seeker, you have to explain why it is you feel that you are being persecuted back home for whatever it is you say you're being persecuted for. And so to offer proof of that explanation, oftentimes it requires experts, professors, lecturers, people who are very familiar with the country conditions of where you're from. And if 90% of your client case is coming from Mexico or other like non-Black majority countries, then you're going to have information about the places where most of your clients are from. And so we see that a lot of times there's a lack of information about why specifically would someone from Jamaica, Ghana, Nigeria, Ethiopia migrate and seek asylum here in the United States as a result of, a lot of times inherited penal codes, especially in the Commonwealth countries. We saw in this year, January 2021, the LGBT Rights Ghana organization, they opened an office in Accra, Ghana. And immediately they saw like this backlash. A lot of politicians, religious institutions, their mainstream media, political figures, they were all just saying, oh my goodness, we can't have an office. That makes it real. That makes LGBTQ people real. And their office was just weeks after opening raided by their law enforcement. And that caused a migration out because people felt unsafe. And so we saw activists both here and all over the world, rallying to challenge the regressive smear campaign that was mounted against LGBTQ.
We're talking with Deborah A., who is a national organizer for Black LGBTQIA+ Migrant Project, as we look at the experiences of Black migrants coming from around the world. Are you Black or part of the LGBTQ+ community? How accessible are resources in your area? Do you have trouble finding community? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Deborah, are you still there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. I think there was just a little drop there. I'm wondering, your project started providing cash assistance to migrants and first-generation people dealing with the effects of COVID. What challenges have you seen amid the pandemic?
The pandemic has obviously created hurdles for people who would like to work in a healthy, safe environment. A lot of our members and community members in general are domestic laborers, day laborers, work as like custodial staff or in retail, and positions of that nature. And so, especially for those who were CNAs or home health aides, they were rapidly getting ill with COVID and having to take time off and then losing their jobs because of the lack of worker protections for migrants. And we were able to create a fund, a mutual aid fund, one that members have contributed to and then offer to other members who are in need. And it's specifically for our members who are LGBTQ migrants and first generation people, Black migrants. And yeah, it's come in handy to help subside people over through the emergencies they're experiencing and the crisis.
Anti-Black racism and persecution, this is a global problem. You said it at the outset. And really, I think the key question before America is, what is to be done about it? What must change now? I want to pose that to you.
Yeah, the only way to really stop the forced migration of people is to also, like I said at the top of that show, is to stop imperialism in all of the forms that it takes. And it's such a broad word, I know, but we've just connected too many people's stories directly to horrific, you know, international policy. And it's forced a lot of people away from their homes. And then once people get here, we've seen these detention centers to be extraordinarily racist, the guards, the wardens, the officers, the double criminalization of Black migrants once we're here. For trans people who are walking, sometimes they're criminalized for walking while trans. The list goes on and on that particularly impacts Black, queer, and trans migrants.
Deborah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Deborah, a national organizer for the Black LGBTQIA+ Migrant Project. We have linked the project at WPR.org/mornings. Tomorrow after 7:30, our conversations on immigration continue as we learn about a growing support system for undocumented college students. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.